Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
Network production. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in. It is the Wednesday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well on what's sort of become a little cloudy. Wednesday afternoon, we could stand a little rain. It has not rained in a while. You know, up until now, we've had plenty of rain. I mean, Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover joining us here in the studio. And Jason, I mean, it's been a, up until now, up until the last week, it hasn't been exceedingly, no. I mean, hot or dry. It's been, we've had some rain. The temperatures have been fairly mild, yeah. I would say, for us.
I agree. Even Monday, it wasn't terrible Monday, but and it's been into the 60s at night.
Yeah.
That's the thing. It's been cool. It's kind of cooled off at night, which has been good. Going to change for the next few days.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's normal. That's not unusual.
That's normal.
That is absolutely, you're right. It's going to be hot, and I haven't seen any strong chances of rain for a few days. I said, yeah, I wouldn't mind it raining a little bit. We actually had to water for the first time. I mean, really, I think the first time we've had to water everything.
Yeah.
Plants wilting, the grass, you know, wanting to brown a little bit. So, yeah, it's getting to be close to summertime. That's just the way it is. So wouldn't mind if we had some of those typical afternoon showers. Welcome in to the Wednesday Drive. Jason Caldwell, as I mentioned, from Auburn Undercover. Bill and Dan.
My policy on this is we're going to have so many 90-plus clear or partly cloudy days with humidity in the quadruple digits. So it's okay. I know you got to do the math on that one, but it's...
Well, humidity can only be...
Not one down
triple,
here, Bill.
One triple digit. Can't be more than 100%.
Not down here. Not
yeah,
normal.
You're right. It can sure feel like.
Yeah,
it.
Yeah. You know what? That's what folks are hoping Cal and Oklahoma experience, you know, when the season starts coming down here, especially if those games are not. Oh, we know the Cal game's
afternoon. It's going to be hot. It's going to be humid. And Jason, it's funny.
Although I did mention, you know.
Yeah, I started thinking about this when Auburn's had those big non- regional, you know, the intersectional.
When they've welcomed a historic
when
program.
When they've welcomed a big-name program in, it's been hot. It's been humid.
Yeah.
But it hasn't generally turned out to be the deciding factor.
The seat has
those
been
teams.
Hot. No. The one that comes to mind, USC was just a really good football team.
They were.
And
didn't
have much of an impact.
Nebraska back in the day made a trip to Auburn. Texas made a trip to
Penn
Auburn.
Penn State was a realization, I think, about how flawed that Auburn team was.
Right.
And everything about it. Environment has only so much to do with it.
Right. If everything else were equal, that could be a big factor.
Yeah. That's a striking.
It hasn't been the case when those other teams – the historical names have come in to visit Auburn.
Yeah, and you know, Oklahoma will be one that Oklahoma's a hot place in the summer. Cal would have an impact because, basically where Cal is would be in the – I mean, it might be still in the 60s and low 80s at that time, depending on what time it is. It could have an impact there. But, yeah, I'm still not quite sure – I guess I understand the reasoning a little bit. I'm still not quite sure why I thought the whole point of this was to let people know when games are, and now you still have to wait 6 days to find out when the game time is.
Yeah. So. Well,
the only thing you know
is whether it's an early game or not.
You got an idea. That's it.
Yeah.
I think that's entirely ESPN wanting to reserve the right to move.
Correct.
And I'm guessing they're going to prioritize the 6 o'clock time slot over the 2:30 or the 3:30? Like I'm thinking ESPN's going to want.
It feels like there's more games in the afternoon than are going to be at night.
That's true. And for a long time, the SEC
opposite.
The SEC signature game was at 3:30 on CBS.
I agree. I think it's going to be 11 and 6 o'clock.
Right. And so if ESPN has a big game that they can flex between 3:30 and 6. You think they might be prioritizing the bigger games at 6?
It feels that way.
Right.
If you're saying 3:30, don't you want to say 7 then?
Yeah, I guess you're right. I'm bouncing between times.
3:30 Eastern.
But we don't know because it gives you a window. And it doesn't say because it says 11 to 12 for the first game.
Right.
It might be 11:30.
And doesn't it say 6 to 7 is the evening? Does. Is the evening window? Yeah.
So I don't know. Yeah, that's the interesting thing to me is that do you find that out? Week of that, hey, this game's going to start at 6:35, or will you start the game when the other one ends? I mean, I don't know.
ESPN would probably, especially if both games are on ESPN or scheduled to be broadcast on ESPN, I wonder if they would have more control over.
But you have to warm up. You have to get prepared. And so I don't know. And here's the other part of this. You've got ACC that are going to be on the same channels. Other than that SEC Network.
I think that's another reason.
ABC, you're going to have multiple games with multiple big conferences going at the same time.
I think that's another reason for the flex windows is because ESPN might want to dance between, this is a 3:30 ESPN game. Okay, let's move it to 7 o'clock ABC. Or let's dance. I think they'll be able, because they have networks that both conferences are sharing. I think that might be another reason.
Yeah.
To answer your question about why so many games are flexed or why so many weekends.
Yeah, I know there's going to be a lot of movement. There is. It's still hard to figure out what's going to be prioritized. You're right. And they haven't said anything about what's going to be prioritized in terms of, hey, here's the ABC game. ABC's been a night game. Will they go doubleheader ABC 2:30, 6 o'clock and have you – paying that much money, I'm not going to be shocked if we don't have a bunch of doubleheader games on ABC before it's over with.
Unless you guys were talking about it as I was chatting with Tracy briefly, I fear we're burying the big Auburn lead, though, today, right? I mean, the basketball news.
We were talking about, we have not mentioned it
enormous,
on the air, but
enormous.
The ACC, the SEC-ACC challenge for both men and women announced. And, yes, Auburn will be traveling to Duke. Auburn headed to Duke, Alabama headed to North Carolina in men's basketball.
Do you have Marlene's email? Because I think you should read Bruce's quote. I think that what he says at the tail end of that is telling.
I got it right here if you want to do it.
Yeah.
This is from Bruce Pearl today. It's hard to put into perspective exactly what this opportunity means for our Auburn basketball program to be selected by ESPN and our conference to compete against one of the greatest programs in the history of college basketball. There's tremendous recognition for our program is at right now. It's also a tremendous responsibility. I can no longer play the we don't get any respect card, which I think we've earned by winning 4 conference championships over the last 70 years. Personally, coaching at Cameron Indoor Stadium against head coach John Shire and the Duke basketball program will be extremely meaningful to me. I know that it'll be the same for our players and our coaching staff.
Yep, Auburn and Duke have met in Durham a couple of times. Last time the teams met was 2018. Last time Auburn played up there was 81,
which was that Coach K's first year.
Yeah,
I think somewhere around in there.
Right.
If you would have told 20-year-old me that Auburn basketball would be playing at Duke, other than as a tune-up game for Duke, I'd have said no chance that's happening. And that's not what this is, a big-time matchup between two programs that are established, have done it. It's one basketball game, and whether you go up there and win or lose won't have much of an impact on the season overall.
No, but if you go up there and win,
it can have an impact on the program.
Yes.
And that's the opportunity, I think, as much as anything. It's a program game more than a single season, one game.
And as tempting as it is to frame it as two peers finally meeting, in men's basketball, Auburn has been on a historic run. Like since the 2017-2018 season, 4 NCAA tournament appearances, maybe 5, I think it's 5, 5 NCAA tournament appearances, 2 regular season conference titles, 2 conference tournament titles, and a Final Four. Like that's an outstanding run for any program over 7-8 years. Also, winning his program in the SEC over that time period, top three if they're not.
Yeah, you know, they're top two or three
in,
now.
In the ballpark.
Right.
There. Duke
has just been on a slide.
Sure. I mean, especially, you know, post-Coast K.
They're on a slide since winning a national championship in 2015.
Yeah.
All they've done is Sweet 16, 32, Elite Eight. Did not make those runs in 19 and 20. And then Final Four in 22, Round of 32, Elite Eight.
Auburn has five Sweet 16s in its history. Duke has five titles. You've got a Duke team that has made 38 of the last 40 NCAA tournaments. A Duke team that has 17 Final Fours. Like and that's not to say this Duke team did all of that because it's the program. But this is when Bruce Pearl talks about why this is an opportunity, it's because Auburn is a relative upstart in college. I mean, Auburn's been playing college basketball since before World War One.
Yeah, I mean, but they've been playing a lot of basketball.
But
yes.
but Auburn's. Auburn's this run of success, you know, this is another chance to legitimize it by having Auburn square off against the bluest of, especially in the last 30, 40 years, like the bluest of blue bloods.
I think you're looking, and Kentucky would still be in there because of the run.
Kansas and UConn have arguments.
Kansas, UConn, Duke,
Carolina.
Duke would probably be the one that you go, it's still probably the most consistent of that group over the last 30, 35 years.
Bruins have won a lot of games, probably not as many as those programs. They've been up there too, you know, but like those are, by the way, all of those programs have some blue.
Yes, correct. And there's a reason it's blue blood.
It's remarkable. Like, yeah, Michigan.
Villanova.
You're talking about the last.
Villanova?
Yeah, Villanova. Michigan and Villanova have some blue.
Here's the interesting thing about this team, because people are like, you know, this Duke team, like, This is a very different Duke team than we have seen. They've got five transfers. They brought in five transfers on this roster. Three of those guys are grad transfers. And then they also have coming in numbers 1, 4, 13, 17, 19, and 37 in the country.
Five of the top 37.
Five of the top 37 players in the country.
That's
six of the top 37.
Six
of the top 37 players in the country. Five of the top 19.
Wow,
are on this roster. Cooper Flagg is the number one player in the country that would be on this team. But they have 6'9", 7'1", 6'6", 6'5", 6'11". That's their freshman group, and then 6'6". Brought in two big guys, a couple of guards. It's going to have a mix of older guys and extremely talented. I would guess that – I know UConn has been there. I would guess that this Duke team, if they're not preseason number one, will be preseason one or two, in my opinion.
They are – we just looked at the odds recently enough, if you wanted to check, like, sports books for national title odds. Mm-hmm. And Duke is in the top 10. I would say consistently Bama, Kansas, and Houston have been the top wave of national championship contenders, and then right behind them, Duke. I've seen Carolina. I've seen Auburn in that wave of teams, and so I would say they're. I mean, Duke and Auburn look to both be solidly in the top 10 preseason. And Duke, I would be surprised. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if folks have Duke in the top five. Maybe because so much of it's new, like you said, so many of the guys are new to the program. But Flagg is a. I mean, he's a different. I mean, he looks to be. Is he the projected first overall in the, or he was for a while. I know maybe some international players have broken
for next
in.
Year.
Yeah, projected first overall in the 2025 draft. I mean, it's a different kind of freshman that Duke is bringing in around those new veterans.
Yeah. I mean, they have, you know, Caleb Foster, Tyrese Proctor back, so they got two guys that scored last year, and then Syracuse transfer, Purdue transfer, Tulane transfer, and then I think a couple more, and then obviously the recruiting class. So this is I looked at our CBS preseason poll, and they have Duke 9, Auburn 10. So that's this is a preseason
top 10 matchup. Really tremendous compliment to the state of Alabama. I mean, Alabama's going to North Carolina. You would think that in an SEC ACC challenge, you'd have Kentucky at either Carolina or Duke, you know, I mean, traditionally, and then you know, Arkansas, Tennessee, you know, some
Florida. But, no, I think it reflects the expectations for Auburn and for Alabama this year. I think it reflects that folks, you know, have them both as bona fide championship contenders, mm-hmm. which, you know, Jason, we were saying, they're just like Auburn's been playing SEC basketball since before World War I. There's probably, I'm going to stop saying probably, there's never been a year where the consensus 1-2 preseason in the SEC is Auburn and Bama.
No.
There's never been a season before, and that's what we're on the verge of here.
Yeah.
And another sign of that is ESPN choosing Alabama to play Carolina in this challenge, and Auburn to play Duke.
Yeah, no, it's pretty remarkable to see, you know, what this thing is going to look like, and then you think about the possibilities for Auburn. You're going to Duke already, and you're playing in a Maui Invitational where you have Michigan State, North Carolina, UConn. You got Dayton there, Iowa State, Memphis, Colorado. You could potentially play, you know, North Carolina, UConn, and Duke in your pre-conference schedule.
Right, yeah. That's strong.
Yes.
That is very, very strong.
And this is the type of schedule for an Auburn team to where if you can win games and take care of business – and then do the things you need to do in the South Asian Conference, this is the type of schedule that gets you a number one overall seed if you win games at the end of the year. That's what this type of schedule can give you.
A needle-moving type of Absolutely, win for, yes. for your tournament resume.
All right, we're just underway. We'd love your thoughts. Love to get your thoughts on that or anything going on in the world of sports. It's Bill, Dan, Jason Caldwell, Drew at the controls as we're underway here on the Wednesday Drive.
Commissioner.
Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Wednesday afternoon, 25 minutes away from 5 o'clock with Bill, Dan, Jason Caldwell, Drew at the controls. And we've talked about the SEC-ACC Challenge, which will send Auburn to Duke, Alabama to North Carolina. Other big news today, Jason, the Super 7 no longer going to be played on Auburn or Alabama's campuses.
Yeah, I knew this was coming. Once the playoffs changed mm-hmm. to move on campus, for Auburn, Alabama, you have to be able to prepare and make sure your field is ready to host
Absolutely.
A playoff game in the middle of December. And so having, you know, all those games and everything that goes along with the state championship.
And it's the
and
same
all that,
week.
Yes, and so you would have it. Yeah, you couldn't turn around and do that. So, and I figured it was heading this way.
I've heard some folks who, even acknowledging the field limitations, like was there a way to keep the rotation going, and in the event that a school is selected for the playoff, then move the championship.
Can't do it because there's so much involved in preparation. It's not just playing football games. You have, you know, video board. You have everybody working. You have people that are working the games. You have host.
You have hotel accommodations.
Host families.
Families as well.
That are hosting.
As well as hotels.
Yeah, but you have people here that, you know, they host the teams on and bring them in, and they set up meals for them, and they're there with them. You have all those things that go on, and so it's not as simple as just kind of moving it. And so quite honestly, I think and I believe that it had gotten to a point to where it needed to be at smaller places, because there's no real atmosphere when you play in Tuscaloosa and Auburn. There's just not. It's a bunch of empty seats, some pretty good crowds. I thought Birmingham was good. I believe that Mobile would be a really good spot with South Alabama because of the hotels. That's part of it.
It is. The biggest problem is travel,
from North Alabama. No question about it. Montgomery would be ideal.
Montgomery would be because, I mean, it's central.
But can Crampton Bowl handle it?
Yeah, I don't know.
Can you have locker rooms, which would have to have a huge
stands, not a problem.
Could you play it at
Could you play it at Alabama State Stadium?
Yeah, but do you have the infrastructure from the parking standpoint?
It's newer than Crampton Bowl. Yeah. Parking would be an issue.
Crampton Bowl's been updated,
but they've locker room is going to be the big issue because you've got two teams playing, two more teams
multiple,
have to
yeah,
have
you need
opportunities
multiple
to
teams.
Have. That's where UAB has an advantage because they kind of built some of that in preparation for it, handled it well.
I've never seen a game at ASU Stadium. I've been inside.
I have been there.
Poked my head in there.
And been for a game. I saw
about
10
years
there.
Old. About
yeah, and so it would be a possibility. The question is could a Troy, could a Jacksonville State handle it from a hotel standpoint?
I guess
that would be the question.
I guess Alabama State would also have, and I don't know the logistics here. I guess they would also have the possibility of hosting,
a playoff game.
Of hosting and you know or being active in the postseason
yeah.
as well.
But, yeah, as a host, with, you know, that division.
So it's predominantly that if you hosted the high school playoff games at your stadium, the thought that a week later the field would not be ready
just a couple of days later.
I think this year it was going to line up on the about the same time.
Yeah, like a Saturday. So you might be playing Thursday or Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then have a game on Saturday.
For some reason, I thought there were 10 days between championship
games. Even still, though, I'm telling you,
to have seven games played on that field the week before,
you wouldn't be able to play.
And I'm not expressing doubt. I think if that's you know if I've never had to
after,
tend to
yeah,
a
after having an entire season to then play set the extra seven
and
games.
It's not prime growing time.
Yeah, this is Bill's territory here at the yard.
Right, really?
It's an impossibility.
Talking December.
And you could play a game.
Yeah,
but it would be like playing a game at Soldier Field in like 1975.
Or it might be like playing in Phoenix on that turf that they roll so or sliding
well,
all over the
thing,
place.
And hey, Bryant Denny Stadium does not have grass at the end of the year anyway. So then you play seven games without grass already, and then try to play a playoff game. It would be a disaster.
If you had any bad weather, it would really be.
Yeah, and so those are, I think. But again,
you think people are going to learn? You think people are going to be in for a rude awakening with field conditions when we try to play these playoff games in December at some of these places where you don't usually see college football played in?
Well, not anymore. You used to though, and that's the thing. It's the way football used to be played.
Mm-hmm.
And those are things that would give you an advantage if you know you're in Michigan, but you know most of those places are now turf, and so it doesn't have as much of an impact. But I go back to, I like it when you have the fans that can make an actual impact on the game.
You're talking back to the high school.
Back to the high school size of the stadium, where if you have 12,000 people at Jordan-Hare Stadium, that there's no impact at all. You have 12,000 people in a 25,000 seat stadium or a 30,000 seat stadium, also all of a sudden that's an impactful crowd.
Mm-hmm.
I think it makes for a better environment. And I think everything with it. And I think quite honestly, I think you're playing a state championship game. The kids that haven't played in one, it's still great for them. But I think for a lot of folks, they're like, hey, it's now a state championship game. It's been in Auburn and Tuscaloosa a long time.
Yeah, it has been great, and it was. It's been great. It's been a great opportunity for some kids to be able to play on a legendary field in a huge stadium.
But it's sort of
a shame that you lose the ability to be playing at home.
I've always wondered, you know, again as a non-athlete sitting in a comfortable chair right now. Like I've always wondered, like for those athletes playing in the state championship game, yes, you're playing at Bryant-Denny. Yes, you're playing at Jordan-Hare, but you look up and it's
empty,
60,000, 70,000empty seats in that stadium. And I do wonder, even the like, is the fact that you're on this historic college football field at all, does that outweigh what you would get from playing a state championship game, as Jason was saying, in a packed 20,000 seat or 15,000 seat?
Hard to imagine that it would be
football stadium. I just wonder.
It would.
And yeah, and Alabama State Stadium is 26,500 is the capacity there for
Troy's. What's Troy?
I think Troy's in the
40s.
I would say probably 45, maybe. Yeah,
South Alabama's is extremely nice. South Alabama and UAB, extremely nice. But you know, I think those are things that you look at.
Gonna get an angry text from Barry
when you start talking about.
I didn't know the number.
30,000, Troy.
Okay.
Yeah, and so
they do. IISA. Or they did.
Correct. It used to be there.
Yeah, they did. They did the championship for the AISA there for a while.
And so I think when you start talking about, you know, possibilities down the road, I think those are things. When you start talking about, you know, the way this thing will move forward,
I believe Charles Henderson still plays their home games at Troy's.
Hancock Whitney's 25,000. I mean, you might have a game or two to where you might go, hey, we might push the limit on that. They're not many. And quite honestly, unless Auburn or Opelika is playing in the game and it's in Auburn, those are the largest crowds we've seen. The 7A games playing on a Wednesday night, you don't have a very big crowd
for any
of those games. 6A games, you have good crowds in. There's not a time where I can think of where you go, other than especially the Opelika game they played here that first time. That was the by far the largest crowd we've seen at one of the Super 7 games. But if you made it, hey, you better get your tickets, 25,000 folks.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about an atmosphere that would be incredible. It would make it a whole lot of fun. So I like the move, but logistically, is it always going to be in Birmingham? Or my guess is they're going to try to move it around some.
Now, what both Auburn and Alabama are hoping is that they feel like, oh, there's justification for it, and they can be hosting a playoff game. I guess maybe Alabama is thinking that, well, they shouldn't be hosting a playoff game. They're going to get a goodbye to the second round. But I mean, if you get an opportunity to host a playoff game, that would be, you know. That would I wonder about this, Jason. I wonder what would be the bigger economic boost. I would think hosting a playoff game is going to be a bigger economic boost even than having a week's worth of the Super 7 in.
Not even close.
Yeah.
I mean, because you might have
every ticket is sold
and for a lot more money.
Yes.
Your hotel rooms, you might bump them up a little bit for a Super 7, but for a playoff game,
yeah,
I mean, you're talking every hotel room in this town is going to be $750 to $1,000 and be booked. It would happen for a playoff game. I think the economic impact would be, and it's been great for Super 7.
Yes, it has.
But it would be through the roof for a football game like that.
All right, tell you what, we'll get to our final break and we'll talk a little. Recruiting, because it has been a busy, busy time and continues to be for football recruiting and more in the final segment of hour number one, our final segment with Jason Caldwell here on the Wednesday Drive.
Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. Final segment of hour number one here on this Wednesday. And Jason Caldwell with us for one more segment. And Jason, I mean, it has been and continues to be a busy time for football recruiting, camps, official visits. Auburn just had a half dozen official visitors on campus the last couple of days.
Yeah, no, it's been busy. I think in a 3-week stretch, it's going to be somewhere around 38 official visitors that'll be on campus in a 3-week stretch in June.
Now I was wondering, and I should know this, but I don't. I know that players now are no longer limited to 5 official visits. Are schools still limited?
I think there's still a limit.
Because I mean, that's tough when players can visit as many places as they want.
Yeah, I think,
and you're still limited to that 56.
There's some additional ones, but and it's the thing. I think you look at it and, you know, people, it's not ideal to have guys visiting in June, but if you don't take an official visit now, you're probably not going to get one. And so you're like, hey, I'd much rather you come in the fall. When a kid's like, well, I'm taking all mine this summer. Okay, then we want you to visit in June. you don't have any choice. And there's some guys that are still going to take some in the fall.
But I mean, the thing is, once you've got 38 over 3 weeks, correct, you don't have many spots left in the fall.
There's not a ton of spots, and that's the thing. It's
not. Well, I don't mean scholarships. I mean for visits.
Well, and then think about Auburn too. You also have 1 month where there's not any games.
And yeah, so, your home games, yeah,
yes,
that's right.
And so you have an entire month of your prime recruiting time, mm-hmm, where you don't have home games, and you think you go Cal, Arkansas, Oklahoma. By the time you get to the end of the month in November, those guys, it's over with.
Oh yeah,
it's done. So you only have really 3 weeks where you go, hey, maybe might bring it. There'll be some guys in for official visits for Oklahoma. Most of them are this summer because of the limited time and the way the schedule sets up as well.
Yeah, well, we've talked about it too. I mean, there needs to be more sense made of the signing periods and the recruiting periods and everything else. But I mean, in the meantime, Auburn continues to reel in commitments. What is it, 13 or 14 now?
Yeah, I think it's 13. Let me look real quick and see. He's right. It changes. We're so knee deep in the official visit side of things. It's 14.
Bryce Deese, I guess, was 14.
Yeah, and it's Diaz.
Diaz. Okay.
Yes.
Good.
Yes. Diaz. Got a chance to watch him.
That's why you're the best.
Got a chance to watch him work out the other day. And actually, we were kind of sitting there before the camp, and kid walked by and we go, that looked like Blake Woodby, who they're recruiting, and that's right, his teammate. And he came back by and he goes, that's him. And he goes, yeah, I came down with my teammate who's working out. And I talked to Diaz, and he goes, hey, if I get an offer, I'm committing. And you hear guys say that all the time. Uh-huh. I'm like, oh, I think this guy probably means it. Worked out.
It's not like he hadn't gotten offers from anybody
so
else.
So good that they're like, hey, offer, and then get word. And we talked to him the day before, and he goes, oh, yeah, I'm committing tomorrow. Like, okay, all right, that's it. And so we were waiting on him to announce it. Talked to him, and he was ready to go. But really athletic guy that can play multiple spots. Yeah, he plays wide receiver and running back on offense, pass rusher,
right,
linebacker, safety. I think he could do any of those things depending on where it is. I think he'll be a special teams guy first. Honestly, you watch him and you go, yeah, he looks like a linebacker, but – he also could be a Jalen McLeod kind of guy coming off the edge because he really gets after the quarterback and does some stuff. So just one of those guys you go like, hey, figure it out later.
Yeah, he's an athlete.
Just figure it out.
He's going to be able to help you somewhere. So so that's good. Yeah, so Auburn at 14, we've talked about it. I mean, I don't see it being extremely difficult for them to be around 20 or so before the before they start camp.
Oh, yeah, I think by – because of Big Cat, I think there's going to be a run. It goes dead June 24th, mm-hmm, and it's dead from June 24th to July 24th. So you have a month where it's dead in terms of on-campus visits.
Right.
Still talk to guys on the phone. There's a lot of guys that said, hey, I'm announcing July the 4th or July the 13th or whatever it is. And then there's some at the end of July. I'd say before we get to August 1st that Auburn will have 20. I think before you get to August 1, they'll be at 20, and I think they got a chance to really get some big time players still in this class.
And the other thing is, I mean, I had somebody the other day go, well, but what does that do with the transfer portal? Not anything really, because you're not worried about 25 anymore.
No, you just have to figure out how many spots you have left, and you're going to lose some. You're going to lose some seniors. You're going to lose some guys to the transfer portal.
Auburn's
open back up.
Yeah, I've got Auburn with 26, 27 seniors on the roster right now.
Yeah, it's going, and you're going to lose. There'll be some guys that may decide to stay around. A lot of them will be gone, and you'll lose some other guys. You may have 35 spots. To fill up between portal and recruiting next year's, mm-hmm, class. So, there'll be numbers.
Yeah, but they have really – I mean, it has been amazing to see the job that Hugh Freeze and his staff have done catching up. I mean, they were so far behind when they came in a year and a half. I think they've caught up. As far as being where you need to be when you're recruiting for this year and beyond.
It's been remarkable to watch. And I keep coming back to the offensive line because that's the spot.
Mm-hmm.
The change in looking at guys they're able to take and guys that they don't even necessarily have to push for because they've got other guys on the board. That is not a spot that Auburn football has been in quite a while. We like this offensive lineman. He's ready to commit, but we're in good shape. We like these other guys better. That has not been in the vocabulary for Auburn offensive line recruiting in more than a decade. That's where they are now. They're able to go, hey, this guy's good, and you know, but we're in good shape. We think this guy's elite. Let's wait on him and see. And that's a good spot to be in.
Mm-hmm. No question. Jason, before we run out of time, let everybody know, I mean, what all is on the horizon, what you know is coming up, and what folks can find there when they check out Auburn Undercover and be able to follow you.
Yeah, tons more recruiting going on. When you start, you know, talking about kind of getting to this weekend, 11 or 12 more official visits coming up on Father's Day weekend. So looking forward to that. Obviously, basketball, all that news going on, baseball portal, softball, transfer portal, all these things will be kind of really kicking into high gear now as you finish up some of these things. So got all that going on. Looking forward to U.S. Open this weekend.
Who you got?
Man, I mean, you just throw Scottie Scheffler out. You have to throw him out. I'd go Colin Morikawa. I think it's going to be ball striking and short game putting, and he's good. So I would go Morikawa if it's not Scheffler. So check us out, auburnundercover.com, and looking forward to it.
Great stuff. Thanks again, Jason. Have a great week, and happy Father's Day.
Y'all too. Thank you, too.
All right. We will take our top of the hour break. Back with hour number two. Come on in and join us.
Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Wednesday Drive. Hope everybody doing well on this hump day. Bill and Dan here in the studio with Drew at the controls. Our thanks to Jason Caldwell, who was in with us for the entire first hour of the show. Hope you got to hear JC. If you missed any of it, check out the podcast.
Podcasts of The Drive, available however you listen to podcasts. Go to your favorite podcasting platform and search for The Drive with Bill Cameron, or go to ESPNAU.com and use the Podcast Center. Again, all that presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. Shout out to Derek and everybody else there at Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
We'd love for you to join in. Anything you want to talk about sports-wise in hour number one, we talked about the SEC-ACC Basketball Challenge, which we'll see Auburn traveling to Durham, North Carolina to take on the Duke Blue Devils. Meanwhile, Alabama heads to North Carolina. So it'll be Auburn and Alabama, who just about everyone projecting to be the top two teams in the SEC, traveling there to the state of North Carolina, to that to the same neighborhood. And as a matter of fact, they'll be playing on the same day.
Yeah, really exciting basketball news earlier today. There had been rumors that Auburn was in the mix to be the opponent for Carolina or Duke in the ACC-SEC Challenge, and sure enough, that's what we find out today, is that Auburn will go to Cameron Indoor the first week of December, Wednesday night, as the 4th?
Yes, Wednesday, December 4th.
Wednesday, December 4th, Auburn will be part of a doubleheader on ESPN, presumably with the Alabama North Carolina game, the other game, as part of that. I don't know if we know anything about times.
No, we haven't seen any times, but you just have to figure there's no way that those games are going to be played at the same time.
I'm going to go 7 p.m., 9 p.m. for your Eastern. Eastern for your starts there. And it's a late start for somebody, but I'm sure the crowd will stick around and still watch whichever game is selected there. And, Auburn-Duke. A battle of Auburn, this team that is on a historic run after a fairly long period of as a dormant basketball school. Auburn has been
That's a nice way of putting it.
Well, I mean,
dormant.
They were asleep.
I don't know if people realized there was a pulse.
Yeah, they were in a long slumber before. Auburn, the last 7-8 seasons since 2017, you've had Bruce Pearl with five NCAA tournament appearances, two conference championships in the regular season, two conference tournament titles, and a Final Four. You know, that this unprecedented run of success. Duke, one of the measuring stick programs all of college basketball. Mm-hmm. Five national titles, 17 Final Fours, 38 of the last 40 NCAA tournaments have contained Duke, dating back to the 1980s. They missed one in the mid-90s, and they missed one in the – I'm not counting the 2020 tournament.
Because everybody missed.
38 of the last 40 tournaments. Duke have contained the Duke Blue Devils. They missed one in the 90s. They missed one earlier this decade, but it's been a – I mean, they have been as blue as a blue blood can be. And for Auburn to go up there and play them, I think it'll be a really special moment for the program. And you don't want to blow a regular season game out of proportion, but I think for longtime fans, for longtime observers of Auburn basketball, to see them play, you know, a heavyweight title fight kind of game.
To be selected to be playing in that game. I mean, because like you know, as I mentioned in the first hour, you would just expect normally if you were, you know, if you're just not closely following Auburn basketball or college basketball. I mean, you'd just expect, oh, you're going to hear Kentucky and Duke or Kentucky and Carolina, and then maybe Arkansas in there or Florida, Tennessee. But no, it's Auburn and Alabama that are headed to the Blue Bloods there in North Carolina.
Another reason why it's significant is because Auburn goes into the season with such expectations. If Auburn were picked to be, you know, if we thought Auburn was going to be a last place team in the conference, I don't know how exciting the news would be that you're going up to Duke when Duke's
right
in the top 10. But when you think you can beat them, when you think you can go up there and hang with Duke and maybe even be a team, Duke's win-loss record non-conference at Cameron Indoor is insane. I know I think they went over a decade under Coach K without losing a non-conference game at home at Cameron Indoor, and I'll check on that number. But Duke's non-conference Cameron Indoor record is bonkers, and Auburn's coming in with a top 10 team and a bona fide national championship contender, looking to be the rare team that isn't just going to go up there and play at Cameron Indoor. I think Auburn's going to go up there thinking they can win at Cameron Indoor, and with the team they have, they probably should think they can win.
Duke is now 274-7 in non-conference home games over the last 40 years.
One more time.
274-7.
Yeah. So
it's 40 years. So it's one every almost 6 years. They lose a home game every 5 or 6 years.
Okay. So, So every 5 or 6 years, there's a, you know, there's like a leap year. There's, the Summer Olympics. You know, these things happen every 4 years. Duke loses a home non-conference game every 5 or 6 years over the last 40 years. Auburn going up to Cameron Indoor this year. And I think it's more, all the more exciting because with a top 10 team bringing back what Auburn brings back. Yeah, I think Bruce Pearl and the team believe, you know, they're not just up there to see the sights and look at the banners and take pictures. They're up there to add that, you know, they want to be the eighth team to beat Duke at Cameron Indoor in the last 40 years.
Duke had a 150 game non-conference home win streak snapped in 2019.
It's insane.
150 that's insane. Straight non-conference.
Yeah, that's completely wins. That's How many non-conference games are you playing? It's 15 years. Yeah. You're probably playing 10. If you're playing 10 non-conference games a year at home, which is questionable.
It's unusual to play that many.
Yeah.
That many at home.
So maybe let's say
you're
eight.
Playing 8 usually.
Okay.
You play 8. That would be 18, 19 years.
Yeah. So this is what Auburn's up against, and it's a really exciting moment. And it's not to say Auburn should think of it as – it's not David versus Goliath necessarily, because Auburn goes into the season with a top 10 team just like Duke. But it would be an extremely significant victory for Bruce Pearl, because it would be another step in – you know, Auburn's never really had an out-of-conference win on the road against a program like Duke before. I don't really know if – you know, has Auburn ever beaten Kansas at Kansas? Has Auburn ever beaten – UCLA at UCLA before?
Without looking them up, my answer is no and no.
In your memories, Bill.
Yeah, no and no.
No, since 80, Auburn has not beaten Carolina or
I can say since 70.
On the road, road games.
Yeah.
They've not beaten Carolina, not beaten UCLA.
No.
Not beaten Kansas. Mm-mm. Did beat UConn. That game was on, that was earlier, that was about a decade ago. I want to say the neutral site. Maybe Auburn went to Stores for that. I don't remember that off the top of my head where that game was located. But no, for Auburn to pick up a win like this, it would be really significant for the people around the program right now, and sort of a sign of how far they've come from what Bruce started with.
Oh yeah. So that is the big news today. We also talked about another big story, the fact that the Super 7 will no longer be played on campus at either Auburn or Alabama because of the possibility of hosting first-round playoff games.
We should also mention what we're doing tomorrow top of the show.
Yes. We've got some interesting things lined up for the rest of the week. Tomorrow, to open the show, we're going to be joined by Auburn Athletics Director John Cohen. We will talk with him, discuss with him. As a matter of fact, I was Wednesdays. I spent a little time with Wimp and Barry Sanderson, and they were just talking about, they'd talked with Greg Byrne, and we're asking him, or we're wondering some of the things we had discussed mentioning with John Cohen. They'd asked Greg Byrne, and he didn't have an answer for them yet. And I'm sure John will be in a similar situation. All right, with the projected or the expected $20 to $22 million that schools should have available for dispersal to their athletes, is that going to be, how is that going to be dispersed? And will it be dispersed among all student athletes? I can't imagine that not being the case, that there would be something for every student athlete. But, I mean, we'll ask John about that tomorrow.
Yeah, I don't know how the – I mean, I don't
know that the ADs know exactly.
When things get into – when things get into employment, you would assume that every student athlete would need to be compensated accordingly.
If it got into employment, I mean, I think you'd pretty much start off with a minimum wage.
Exactly. I don't know, but if it were something else, revenue sharing, things like that. Like, do you factor in, how much revenue is being generated by the sport? Do you factor in, how much revenue is being generated by individual players on the sport? Because I do wonder if there could be some low numbers when you get outside of high profile sports in college athletics, if you do it that way, which doesn't seem which seems unfair, because those athletes are still putting in a lot of time.
They are.
And so it's almost like, the better deal would be.
But they're talking revenue sharing. And if there's no revenue.
I suppose some of the revenue would be, you could look and say that all of the sports factor into the television deal. There is a share of the revenue coming from, even the sports that are seldom shown on SEC Network and things like that. But I don't know. I'm sure that this is being decided in courtrooms and in law offices around the country. And yeah, it's going to be interesting to get John Cohen's thoughts on that. And still, I'm really interested to hear just sort of his takeaways from the first year and a half of Hugh Freeze on the job. Not just that.
I want to hear, I'd like to get his thoughts on the state of the athletic program, a couple of years in.
Oh, certainly. How he feels. I mean, I think focusing on Hugh Freeze, if you allow him to sort of expand on the department as a whole, he might be able to pick and choose, what he wants to talk about, which is understandable. But I'm really interested to know, it's not like he didn't know who Hugh Freeze was, but what he was expecting versus what he's gotten.
Sure.
With the first year and a half of, and a lot of it depends on how it looks this fall on the field. But this is and you know what, his relationship with Bruce Pearl is an interesting one, because that's an outsized figure in the department that you have to you have to figure out a way to coexist with. There were questions, even though Alan Green did sign or played a role in the contract that Bruce Pearl received during his tenure. There were questions before John Cohen. I think there were questions of how peacefully Bruce Pearl was coexisting with decision makers in the athletic department, like Alan Green and Stephen Leith. You go back to remember the press conference. I think it was when Alan Green was hired. The press conference where Alan Green was hired, and it was odd how evasive and unsupportive. And granted, the FBI thing was unfolding, but it was odd how sort of it didn't seem Auburn was ready to offer full, you know, a full throated support of Bruce Pearl, right. You know, and really shout, you know, at that press conference how they stood behind him. You know, you don't get that sense of any sort of division now. And I'd really like the, you know, sort of John Cohen's thoughts on working
and then baseball. I mean, that's John's yep. sport. You know, that he played and coached extremely successfully in baseball as well. So yeah, we're looking forward to that. John Cohen joining us the beginning of the show.
Building a roster has changed so much in baseball since John Cohen's day, though, right? I wonder, yeah. You know, that's something to ask about, right? As you know, as Coach Thompson. Yeah,
a lot of times we talk to coaches, go, "How much do you miss that?" And it's like, well, yeah. Things have changed drastically over the last decade. So that's tomorrow. And then Friday, we're on the road at Moe's Original Barbecue over at Bent Creek. We will be there. On the Line will be there. So we're looking forward to that on Friday. So fun rest of the week on tap. We've got the rest of the show to go. Got three more segments. We'd love for you to join in. 334-321-1390. That is the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar. We mentioned the text box, which is presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, also sponsoring the podcast. And, I did mention the orthopedic clinic, didn't I, at the top of this hour?
If not, mention them again, because we love them.
Absolutely. They're the sponsor of the second hour of the show every day, the orthopedic clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. Come on in and join us here on the Wednesday Drive.
Did you know that Dixie Electric
Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Wednesday afternoon, 21 minutes after 5 o'clock. Thing that I wanted to get to, sad news for, older NBA fans or Lakers fans, Jerry West passing away at the age of 86. He was one of my favorite players when I was young. Jerry, prolific scorer, man, what a shooter he was, great ball handler, as well, but, yeah, he and Gail Goodrich in the backcourt for the Lakers. Jerry, number 44, which I thought it seemed like an unusual number for a guard back in the day. But, a great, great basketball player and a pretty darn good executive.
Outstanding as well. NBA career entirely with the Lakers, 15 seasons.
He was drafted by the Minneapolis Lakers, if I'm not mistaken.
And never, I don't believe he ever played.
No, they moved to L.A.
It was the final draft in Minneapolis, or first pick of the second overall
pick.
Which,
if you think about it, I love some of the nicknames when teams move and they keep the team nickname, the team name. The Los Angeles Lakers.
Yeah.
How many lakes are there in L.A.?
Not terribly close.
Minneapolis made a lot more sense.
How much jazz is there in Salt Lake City,
right,
Bill?
Yeah. I love it.
Yeah. So the some of them change when you get to. I mean, Clippers, I guess, makes a little more sense. There's still boats.
Yeah, that's true.
It's still close enough to a coast. But Jerry West, 15 years a Laker. as the head coach, or no, 15 years a player, mm-hmm. Spent a couple more years as a head coach following his retirement, and then a long time in the front office as well, one NBA Executive of the Year twice during his long career in basketball, and just a universally admired as a competitor and as someone who gave a lot to the to the game of basketball, passing away at the age of, how old was he?
86
years old.
86. Finished his career averaging 27 over 15 years, 27 points a game for his team. And I mean, he had a couple of other guys that could score around him too.
Oh, I mean, oh, sure. Oh, no. I mean, on those Lakers teams.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, because then they get to they get. I mean, he's the coach of the team in the late 70s. He steps aside right when Magic gets there, and they implement the new system. A lot of this is dramatized in the HBO series Winning Time. Honestly, it's before my time. You know, his playing career.
I know
playing
career.
I've heard him compared to Archie Manning, and that he was often a one-man, team on some of those Lakers squads early in his career.
They had Elgin Baylor.
Elgin Baylor shows up.
My goodness, they had Elgin Baylor and Gail Goodrich, and then Chamberlain came along. I mean, they had a little talent.
14-time
they just couldn't quite win the big one.
14-time All-Star with the Lakers. Was the All-Star MVP in 1972, which is the same year that the Lakers won the championship, his only championship as a player.
Is that when they had the 33-game winning streak?
And the he also had a playoff series with 46 points per game, which is an NBA record that could be a while before anybody finishes a playoff series with more than 46 points per game in the series. But yeah, two-time NBA Executive of the Year on top of all his other accomplishments. Very sad news regarding Jerry West earlier today.
Yeah, Jerry West, as I said, 86. But West Virginia is where he grew up and played his college ball before he moved on. That's tough. Sad news to hear today. Wanted to get
just a guy who was around the NBA for a really long time.
Yeah, he
time
really was.
I mean, between his time, he was the executive of the Grizzlies, was an assistant, or was a consultant with the Clippers. I think a little bit later on in his time, involved with the Warriors too. I want to say like Jerry West had some did some consulting work later on, but he was an excellent basketball mind who played a big role in building that Lakers team with Magic and Kareem and Worthy that won the championship a couple times in the 80s.
Wanted to get into something we don't talk an awful lot about on the air. We do an awful lot of talking about it off the air, and that's Major League Baseball. Are
you hitting the panic button on the Braves?
It's pretty darn close, I think. I think it's time to be more than slightly concerned about what's going on with the Braves. And I know any team that loses a Spencer Strider and a Ronald Acuna Jr., I mean, those are huge losses. And perhaps the most dominant pitcher and hitter in the National League a year ago. But the Braves aren't even just okay lately. They are right now on a four-game losing streak. It is their second four-game losing streak in the last few weeks.
Full disclosure.
They're double-figure games back of the Phillies.
Bill has Ozzie Albies, Austin Riley, and Matt Olson in a fantasy baseball league.
Yeah, I do.
And I would say those are the three Braves that have been struggling the most.
Austin Riley probably struggling the most of the Braves. I mean, Ozzie Albies is okay. Matt Olson's hitting for a little power. But Austin Riley's hit three home runs. Has three home runs. A guy that has been a 30-homer hitter since he arrived in the majors with the Braves. And, you know, he's still in his 20s. So you have to wonder. But this morning, all right, so I was up early this morning and in the car, and I listening a little bit to MLB radio, and I heard a little conversation, and I don't know if we haven't really talked about some of the things that have been mentioned about the Ronald Acuña this year as compared to the Ronald Acuña a year ago. Before his injury, Ronald Acuña was struggling too, big time. And there had been some questions, some murmurs about, you know, did was Ronald Acuña getting a little help at least from somewhere as to what was coming, because he hit the ball so well. And I mean, he always has hit the ball well, but last year, just an extraordinary year, one of the best years in the history of Major League Baseball, where he became the first 40-70 player in the history of baseball. But this year, I mean, just he was struggling to just make contact, to hit the ball. And there'd been some just murmurs, if you will, about, you know, could something have been going on similar to the Astros scandal of a few years back.
So Scott White is a fantasy baseball guy for CBS Sports.
Right.
He wrote some interesting stuff about all three of the Braves in question here. I have no insight into, you know, could the Braves have been doing something nefarious in the past, but with regards to this season, Ozzie's exit velocities are in line with career norms, which would suggest not an injury, probably more of a timing issue.
That's what I said. He's been okay.
There are not
anything like his 30 homer year a year ago.
Yeah, there are folks wondering if he's a victim of, like, some hitters just they're not getting the carry that they were on. The old ball that they were using.
I think the ball is not as lively.
Right. So Ozzie's a question there with Austin Riley. I guess you could lump Michael Harris in here.
Yeah,
too,
Michael Harris. Yeah. I mean the Braves lineup, with the exception of Marcell Ozuna, the Braves lineup is underperforming this year.
Yeah, and Harris is, Scott White notes, Harris is putting the ball on the ground a ton,
right,
compared to when he was really successful last season. Matt Olson is still a top 10 percentile exit velocity guy, but he's
not making contact as much.
Strikeout rate, yes, is the strikeout rate is up, and he's on pace. I think he's on pace for 25 homers, which
He hit 50 plus a year ago.
But he hit 50 plus a year ago, but only about 30 right the year before that. So I
right.
mean, it's.
I mean, he's a guy that you would expect to hit between 30 and 40.
Right.
I mean, he's just that's his career.
And then, I mean,
Austin Riley is the one.
I'm done betting against Austin Riley, Bill.
I know already. You were skeptical.
You never let me live it down.
First came
last
up.
Time I bet him. Austin Riley
is not, his exit velocity is way down. He is striking out at an alarming rate. Now I wonder, he's had some back problems. I wonder if part of that is physical, but he just looks lost right now.
He's not now. Scott White notes for Riley, the strikeout rate, the walk rate, and the hard hit rate are in line with the last couple of seasons. He's not hitting it on the barrel like he was in the last couple of years. So Austin Riley's barrel rate went from 15 or 16%, and now it's closer to 10%. So it's, you know, that could be timing. You know, that could be something he could fix, or that could be that could be something physical keeping him from playing like he used to.
Whatever it is, very uncomfortable for the Braves who are still searching for that end of the rotation guy. They've had so many injuries, and they brought up their top pitching prospects have all been up and gotten auditions, and I guess Schwellenbach's going. Is he going again today?
I think that's right.
I mean, they're going with the youngsters, seeing who can do it. You know, Charlie Morton's 40, so you just I still think the Braves are going to make the playoffs, but they're just a far sight from what they were a year ago. All right, before we get to our bottom of the hour call, let's get to the drive hotline, 334-321-1390. And go ahead. You're on the drive. Who are we speaking to?
Hey, guys, I don't know if you can hear me, but this is Jeff.
Yeah,
hey,
we got Jeff. You, Jeff. Yeah, we have phone lines back, but we have no way of screening the calls. The system just sort of automatically answers them, and we have to just sort of check every once in a while to make sure if we have a call or not.
Okay, good, good. You guys doing all right?
Yeah, doing fine. How about you?
I'm doing good. Trying to stay cool.
Yeah, well, it's not going to get any easier.
Yeah. Well, look, first thing, a couple things. First of all, the passing of the late Jerry West, people don't forget, don't realize how great this guy. I was a youngster, don't even remember, but through the history, he was unbelievable as a scorer back in the day.
Oh, no question. I mean, he was nearly automatic, it felt like, from, I mean, and this was before the three-point line as well. I mean, he was a deadly outside shooter.
Well, yeah. He had an old saying, and I had the pleasure of meeting him years ago, living in Vegas, Nevada. He was a frequent visitor. He would come over to the AAU tournaments every Sunday.
Huh.
I mean, every summer, I'm sorry, and scout the young high school kids. So
okay. He
was very knowledgeable in the game, not just as a player, but as an architect, as a executive. He was unbelievable.
Oh, that you're absolutely right about that.
Oh, yeah. So rest in peace to him. Like I said, he was a great gentleman. I got to meet him, and it was unbelievable. Couple other things. Wow, what a big news with the ACC-SEC pairings. That is absolutely big deal for Auburn basketball.
No question. I mean, that is a tremendous compliment to where Bruce Pearl has this Auburn basketball program now and its national perception.
Absolutely. Now, I would have been sure that I would have thought Arkansas, just because of Calipari, would have gotten one of those matchups. But who are they playing against? Do we know?
Arkansas. Yeah. Arkansas drew Miami.
According to think they go to Miami, if I'm not mistaken.
That's not much. I think this Miami program has fallen off somewhat.
Well, they were in the Final Four, with the Elite Eight 2 years ago, you know, and they invested heavily in NIL, but I think that as tempting as it would be to go with, you know, whether it's Arkansas or Kentucky or Tennessee, I think the safest bet for ESPN as far as teams that will still be nationally relevant and in the conversation at, you know, when the challenge happens in December, Alabama and Auburn were the best bets, and I think putting them against Carolina and Duke makes a lot of sense this year, and it's a real opportunity for both Alabama and Auburn to pick up an important win, not just for this season and for their tournament resume, but a win that would be pretty significant historically for both of those teams.
Yeah, and to put them both on the same night, I thought they might have put them on opposite nights, but I think they want to showcase those two programs on the same night. That wasn't by accident.
No, you're right. Well, I mean, the other thing is they also want to showcase Carolina and Duke. So,
understandable.
So, but I think that ensures that the games are not going to be played at the same time, because I don't think you're going to see them trying to match Carolina and Duke up against each other.
No, I believe that'll be their showcase doubleheader for that night on the big ESPN. I really do.
Yeah, it should be. Absolutely. I mean, it should be. I mean, all four of those teams should be in the top 10. Now, I don't know if they still will be by December 4th, but they're all four going to head into the season as top 10 teams.
Wow. Here we are. I'm anticipating football, and wow. And we get this. This is going to be an unbelievable draw into the basketball season.
Yeah, now, I don't know if you heard Jason a while ago, but I am 100% with him. Man, don't you wish that game had been here? If it were going to be here, I mean, he's absolutely right. There'd be people ready to stand in line right now to buy tickets.
Oh, it'd be nuts. It'd be, tickets would be going for $1,000 easily.
Oh, they won't be cheap. They won't be cheap at Cameron, I can tell you that.
Oh yeah. I would love to just be in the atmosphere. I'll keep it in mind. I may even just make a journey up to Cameron just to hang out.
I bet there will be quite a few folks that'll do that.
It's a special place. I haven't been there for a Duke men's game before, but I've been able to go to the arena, and I called a women's game, and it was a Yeah, it's a really, really cool venue, and it's going to be a memorable trip for the Auburn folks who go up there for sure.
Oh, yeah. One last thing, guys, I'll let you go. Yesterday, I tried to get in when you had Andy, but I think the phones weren't cooperating much. I would have loved to have talked to Andy. I'm a huge fan of his, so I love to hear his calls. But you guys were talking about music, and, you know, just being from a sports perspective, I don't know whether you guys are aware the late Waymon Tisdale was an accomplished jazz artist.
No, I did not know that.
Absolutely he was. He's a jazz guitarist. If you ever Google him, he was tremendous. I got to see him several times perform.
I'll definitely check that out.
After his playing career was over, he ventured into the world of jazz music. And when I tell you, he wasn't some average Joe. He was a renowned performer.
Well, I'm sort of embarrassed that I didn't realize
that. Cool.
I didn't know that.
Very cool.
Yes, so I just wanted to share that with you.
Yeah, I'm glad you did.
Everyone out there, you know, if you get a chance, please check him out. And I had the great pleasure of meeting him. And when I tell you, a real gentleman, he was just unbelievable gentleman.
That's a great story, Jeff. Really, really appreciate you updating us. Yeah, and the situation with the phones is when we have a caller on, it's just going to ring. We can only have one call connected at a time. Don't have the rollover numbers the way we have. So, yeah, be patient. If you're trying, like if you were trying to call in while we were talking to Jeff, the phone would just ring. And then once the call is disconnected, then the next call that was in line would automatically connect. We'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Still plenty of time for you to join in as we continue here with the Wednesday Drive.
On ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Wednesday edition of the drive. Bill and Dan, Drew at the controls. And we'd love for you to join in again. The little bit different situation with the phones. We are able to get your phone calls. We're unable to screen them, so you'll just, if you connect through, it'll just automatically connect, and then we'll hopefully bring you on board as soon as possible.
You should check out the podcast if you missed hour number one, because Jason Caldwell, Information Jason, was in the house telling us about all the recruits going on, you know, all the recruiting going on, all the latest commitments for Auburn in football as Hugh Freeze continues to build that class, wants to get it to 20 before August 1st. Father's Day weekend sounds like it's going to be a pretty big weekend.
Yeah, maybe another dozen official visitors.
As Auburn takes, you know, every opportunity they can in the summertime. Auburn-Duke, the most significant of the matchups revealed for the ACC-SEC Challenge. North Carolina versus Alabama, also one of the highlights of the reveal.
That one actually may be higher ranked.
Could be, and depends on, you know, what it looks like when we get into the ESPN notes in their story on ESPN.com, Borzello's story, Auburn is ranked 11 in ESPN's latest way too early top 25. Duke is 8. Let's see if I can find. Carolina is 10 and Alabama is 2 mm-hmm. in the way too early. So all four in the top 11.
And I've seen a couple of preseason polls that have Auburn in the top 10. So that's what I was saying to Jeff a little while ago, is all four teams feel like there's a good chance that they could be in the preseason top 10.
Both of them with you know, Alabama getting getting Mark Sears back, and with North Carolina getting R.J. Davis back. Like, both of them got huge news from a guard who could have decided to go elsewhere, either in the pros or elsewhere in college basketball. But both of them have their leaders back, and there's a big reason why folks are bullish on both Carolina and Alabama this year, two teams that made the Sweet 16 and mm-hmm. played each other in the Sweet 16
that
last
is right.
season.
All right, we're going to get to the phones. Before we do, I did want to – that I meant to mention this a little earlier. Every Wednesday I'm on with Wimp and Barry Sanderson on their show up in Tuscaloosa, and they they both asked me, how did I feel when they said, we're going to tell you something.
Did they ask you like Bob Dylan?
No. We talked about music a little bit. No, but you know, they Wimp especially just sort of likes to gauge how Auburn people feel about Aiden Holloway going to Tuscaloosa. And both Wimp and Barry said, there's no question that thus far, just watching practices, the best shooter on the court is Aiden Holloway. And I said, well, that doesn't shock me because we heard the same thing about him in practice last year. He just couldn't get them all to fall in the game.
Well, and Holloway wasn't some, you know, he wasn't some out of nowhere recruit that Bruce Pearl discovered either.
No, but I mean, Ferg many times said how fabulous Aiden shot it in practice.
Well, I think the whole team felt that way about Aiden's shot in practice. That's why they were willing to give Aiden as many shots as they were in games, and it just couldn't work out. And I'll go to my grave believing, Bill, that it was just between veterans in win now mode and a pair of young point guards who had never really been starting point guards in college basketball before, that was a really tough mix.
Yep.
I think that was ultimately, and I think Bruce Pearl going out and getting JP Pegues is a sign that Bruce Pearl did not want to run it back.
Not with an inexperienced point
much,
guard.
Too much responsibility on the point guard.
And as we get to the phones, the response after I said that was, yeah, and they also wonder where he's going to get the minutes with Mark Sears back. Let's get back to the Drive hotline. Go ahead. You're on the Drive. Who do we have?
Hey, guys. It's Tex.
Hey, man.
Hello, Tex.
Apologize for my staff messing up yesterday. My phone was buzzing by the time I got through talking about the last one in Lynyrd Skynyrd being in Atlanta and not Greenville.
Oh, that's all right.
And I got some shame on you for being that wrong. anyway... So I was going to make a joke, Dan. I never heard of Nafarious. Is he a infielder or an outfielder for the Braves? So anyway, it was a joke. I happen to know a guy named Joey Farias. And so you mentioned Jerry West. Had a chance to meet him one time in a unique way, in that Cindy and I walked into Hungry Hunter when we were still students. Mm-hmm. And there was Sonny Smith looking at us, and he says hello to us, and we stop and talk to him.
Yeah, Sonny was very good friends with Jerry.
Jerry West. Mm-hmm. He said, yes, I am. Some of the biggest hands I've ever seen. Huge hands. So I could see why he could shoot the basketball he was. And he was very gracious to two young kids walking in that he had never met before. So it was kind of neat to see him. And him and Sonny were just sitting there laughing as we were walking up. You could tell they had a really good relationship.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry to see him go. That's a good basketball man that's left. And
indeed.
It's a shame, but it's going to happen to all of us sooner or later. But it's really a shame. So –
With the recent Luke Walton news and then this with Jerry West, I mean, two guys that had been around the sport for such a long time. What did I say? The recent Bill Walton news. And now, yeah, Jerry West, too. Like, that's just it's been a really tough last couple of weeks for guys who had been in, you know, just been associated with the NBA and with basketball for all, if you're in your 30s, your 40s, like, those guys have been around the sport your entire life.
If you're in your 60s, they've been around for a
while. Oh, yeah. Auburn has, I believe, three commitments from the portal and feel like they're very close on another one or two. They either have been or are hosting a pitcher out of Creighton who has been in, who is in. Or is coming in. He's either coming in or is in right now. Obviously, pitching is a big priority for Butch and Auburn right now. But I've heard that there are a couple of other commitments, but I'm not exactly sure who they are, if they're ready to release those yet after the catcher from Samford and the infielder from South Florida.
Do you remember regional Wofford was in? I can't remember who they were with.
No, I don't. Not off the top of my head, I don't.
Surprisingly, and my first inclination was, and I'm not positive. That's the reason I asked the question. I don't. Were they in the LSU regional?
I believe they were in Chapel Hill,
with North Carolina. Chapel Hill, yeah.
Yeah.
That's where. Yeah. So, and 1 week after, LSU gets the top two pitchers from Wofford.
Yeah, well, it's nice to have them that close. Nice to have prospects that close.
Interesting way to scout and close the deal pretty quickly.
Yeah, no kidding.
It may have been closed before. It may have been closed in a hotel in Chapel Hill. But, you know, the coach here does things the right way. He builds from the bottom up. He doesn't like rebuilding rosters. And it's just amazing to me that the two guys from Wofford, I thought they were in the same room.
That makes sense.
I'll let somebody else get in, guys. Hey, I'm glad you're back on the air, but I wish the phones would work slightly better.
Well, at least we're able to get you on, Tex. Appreciate it.
Bye, Tex.
All right, we will get to our final break of the afternoon here on The Drive. Inspired by the